But you don't get to that level without having done that. Like, that is part of the path. That is part of the journey. Knowing that failure is going to be there, man, that you're going to be fat on your face and you are going to be puking. That's part of it. And if you're not willing to go through it, then get back on the sidelines. But I just, again, I don't think the sidelines is worth it, man. I think it's in the game, man, is that's when the real success is going to come. You know, other people can describe you, but only you can define you.
This is an episode you're not going to want to miss. This is an interview with Dr. Rob Bell about his new book called Puke and Rally. It's not about the setback. It's about the comeback.
He's a noted sports psychology coach, and he talks to us about mental toughness, hinge points in our lives or our race, and Scott and I's favorite topic, why. Why we do what we do.
But before we get to that interview, we need to thank one of our longtime loyal partners.
And that loyal partner you're talking about, Scott, is exoskin.us.
My feet are happy because I have a pair of new socks. I have 5 new pair of socks that I just ordered from Exoskin, and boy, are my feet happy with me.
They should be, Scott, because Exoskin is made with the toughest material and with technology and science to make sure that our feet are happy.
And blister-free. They wick away moisture, they reduce friction, and that's what you want in a sock. Exoskin makes the best socks on the market.
You know what's great, Scott? Durability. And you need that in a sock. You can't have a sock that gives up halfway through a race.
And you can get a durable pair of socks by going to exoskin.us. If you use the code TRN, you can get 15% off. If you can't remember that, go to our deals page and click on the banner. Thanks for joining another edition of Trail Runner Nation. My name is Scott War.
And I'm Don Freeman. And today we are very excited. We have an unbelievable guest on the show. And as I did my research and I looked into his book, I even got a little bit nervous about this conversation because this is fantastic. We have Dr. Rob Bell, and he is a noted sports psychologist coach. His resume includes Olympic medalists, the University of Notre Dame, 3 different PGA champions, NFL clients, whether they're teams or players, business and corporate athletes include Marriott, Walgreens, Morgan Stanley. He's authored 7 books on mental toughness. One's called No Fear, Mental Toughness Training for Golf, No One Gets There Alone, The Hinge, Don't Should Your Kids, and 50 Ways to Win in Pro Football Hinge Point Moments. And the book we're talking about today, Puke and Rally. And that's what excited me about this. As I was scrolling through
that's
the
best
internet,
title of all of them, Dr. Rob.
It stopped me on my tracks. Dr. Rob Bell, welcome to the podcast and the episode. And not only that, Rob Bell is an Ironman and an accomplished trail runner, currently preparing for IT100, the Indiana Trail 100. So welcome to the podcast, Rob. How's your training going?
Don, Scott, thanks for having me, man. How's the training going? Great question, man. I feel like the last couple of weeks actually have been good. This is a really important month. I mean, when it comes to it, I'll be ready. And that, I think that's an important mindset, is when that day comes, October 9th, I'll be ready.
So we're talking to a mental toughness coach. How do you prepare that mind mentally? How do you wrap yourself around? What do you do that I should be doing?
Jeez, man. I mean, you know, and that's the thing, right? It's like, well, how do we work on the mindset? Like, how do we work on that? And I think part of it is number one, we got to know ourselves. And one way or another, I think it's always getting back to preparation. I think some people, like for me, there's going to be some runs there where it's really tough. I mean, it's going to be, you know, a 50 miler in there that, look, if I can do that, then I know what nighttime is going to be like. And it's really, man, it's just getting in that mindset. And I think it just boils down to this. It's like, I think there are different things on the runs that we can do, being in the moment. We're learning from every run, right? And it's not really shaming ourselves if we have a real bad one or if we puke and rally, but it's like, man, what did I learn from that one? But I think the big thing is really, it's just going to be on the mindset when it comes to race day. And race day, and it might sound bad, right? I'm not saying this is the mentality for anybody or everybody. But I believe, look, if we never give up, it will be successful. So the mentality will come down to, and this conversation I had with my family, like, look, I will finish this race or I will die in the process. It's really that simple. Not easy, but there will be nothing that will get in that way. I think when we adapt that mindset, when we adapt that mindset with anything in life, then, I mean, look, it's going to show us we will be successful.
As you're going through the training, Dr. Rob, there's ups and downs in training, right? You may do a training block that are, you're just knocking the ball out of the park. You get up fresh every morning, you get out there, your legs feel light. You feel like you're floating, you get into a zone or a flow state. And then for whatever reason, things can fall apart on one run, two runs, a training block where you're just thinking, you know what, maybe I should be a quilter. No offense to the quilters out there, the listening to Trail Runner Nation, but maybe I should be a quilter. I am not designed to do this. I want, you know, and so you get this thrown at you. How do you deal with those hiccups in your training block, the ups and downs in a training block mentally?
Yeah, really, be honest, man, there weren't too many ups till really just the last couple of weeks. I mean, May and June were, and even July, half of July were so humid that I was throwing up on every single run. I just could not get in. Wow. And, you know, and I've hired, you know, a nutritionist, dietitian to help me out with that. And I mean, I was sweating just so much. I had no idea how much sodium potassium I was losing. And I finished, you know, I had a run where, look, it was pretty flat, you know, but I was going to do a 50 miles. And at 32, you know, I'm just ralphing. And I'm like, I just don't feel like walking another 20 miles here. And, you know, my family was with me and I called it a day. And that was where I was seriously questioning. I said, maybe just stick with the 50 miler. Hey, what's wrong with just a marathon? You know what I'm saying? Like, why not just do that? So then it came back to having a look at my why, not making an emotional decision there. And it's about puke and rally. I couldn't rally that day, but I was back that next morning. And that's the important thing, man. It's like, look, it's not about the setback. It's always about the comeback. It's what happens after the failure, after the setback, after that painful experience. That's really what matters. And even in races, I mean, they're going to go bad. I saw a tattoo this morning, somebody that failed twice at Hard Rock and, you know, had the tattoo, man, DNF, and then the time for finish. And that's really, and that's the beauty about, I think, with ultra running too, right? If you just keep moving, if you just stay in the game long enough, you will be successful. And that's what I believe. So I think it's a lot of, you know, being able to handle the bad times that come, not making any emotional decisions like that. And I've always used this one right here. It's like, you never let a win go to your head, but you never let a loss go to your heart. It cannot touch your soul in terms of how that experience was, because then once it starts touching your soul, then it's affecting your identity. And then it really, and then we're trying to play mental gymnastics and it gets really, really difficult.
So Dr. Bill, I picked up the book. Okay. I'm not one to prepare much, but I sat down with the book last night and it's 156 pages long. And I read straight through 102 and only got up out of the chair because I needed to be somewhere. Otherwise, I would have pushed on through. It's a great read. It's fascinating. I kept turning the pages. And what I loved about it is that you bring in story, you bring in some great quotes from notable people that we'll recognize, and then you teach a principle around it. And then it moves to the next one, the next chapter, so quickly that it's perfect for our 2021 attention span. It just reads great. It's almost like you've written 7 books before and you've had some practice on this. It is a great book. And I want to share it with non-athletes. My daughter, I would love for her to read it so she can get a perspective on what puking is and what rallying is and hinge points. Let's talk about some of those terms. When you say puke, what do you mean? Do you mean physically leaning over the trail with your hands on your knees, or what? Let's define some of these principles that you share with Walgreens.
Yeah, it's both, right? I mean, I look at a puke situation as this. I mean, obviously there's going to be that physical part. And let me start by saying, like, and I appreciate the comments about the book. Like, I always want to write airplane books. And what I mean by that is I want someone to be able to get on an airplane in Indianapolis, land in Orlando, and then finish the book. Like, that's the kind of book that I want to write. I'm a simplest, powerful kind of guy. I'm just not that intelligent, man. I was just a dumb jock that just kind of stayed in school and was passionate about the mental game. But the puke can be any major setback that I think happens in life. And that's how we just got to define it. So I look at, like, a lot of times, you know, puke examples can happen from other people in our lives. And it's like one of the concepts that I just came across it. But every successful person that I've ever come across, every successful one was told, you can't do it. That's a bad idea. Don't try it. Why? Why is it that every successful person was told that? Didn't matter who it was. Because that's a puke moment. Like when you have a coach that tells you you're not going to be good enough. Like when you have a teacher that says you're going to end up just like your brother. When you have a dad that doesn't believe in you and says you're wasting your time. That's painful moments. But there's a huge gift in that. And the gift is that it's a fish or cut bait moment. Like you cannot be on the fence in those moments. You are either going to listen to yourself and believe in yourself, or eventually you're going to listen to that negative voice. And it really then becomes a choice. And then which path are you going to want to take? Now, I understand, and that's the difficulty about, look, there have been so many more people that were told that believe that negative voice, right? They believe that teacher said you weren't going to be good enough or you're stupid. They believe that. And that's the key importance that I think, look, we have to have people around us too. You just got to have that one person, right? One friend can make all the difference in your life. You got to have that one person in your life that can say, dude, don't listen to that coach, man. You can do this. And that's the power then of coaching, right? And if you think about a coach, man, I mean, a coach takes you someplace that you want to go. And I believe we're all coaches, but we're all students at the same time. And that's what I look at when it comes to those puke moments. It's going to be any kind of setback that's so painful because no one likes to puke. I don't like to puke. I hate it, right? I hate retching, but we've all done it and it's all going to happen in our lives.
Dr. Rob, this pivotal moment where someone says you can't do this or puts some kind of limitation on you, is your response to that, is that part of our personality trait that we were born with? Or are there some things and strategies that you have learned as a coach that can prepare us for that tipping point? We go either and believe what we're being told or not. Are there things that we can do so that more times than not, we're going to fall on the, I believe in myself? And I realize you said one of the strategies is have a good friend that says, don't listen to them, or have a good coach that says, don't listen to them. But what are some other ways that we can improve our likelihood of not listening to those comments or believing them?
Boy, it's a great one, right? I mean, you have to understand this, is they don't boo nobodies. They don't boo nobodies, right? Whoever we talk about, successful or not successful, we're talking about them for a reason. And so the fact of, like, if somebody close to us is going to tell us, because it happens in every one of our lives, right? We're going to be told that. So it's like being able to prepare for those moments. Why is it that some people are more like predisposed to be able to handle that and they turn that into fuel, right? Like, I'll show you mentality. Mm-hmm. I think it goes deeper. I think it's about showing ourselves right. But I just think that we don't really prepare for it more so than when that does happen, it's going to solidify and it's going to make our choice about what path are we going to go down. Like those are those moments where we really have to believe in ourselves. So the people that like are predisposed to handle these better, boy, they weren't patted on the back from 6 years old and told about how great they were and how wonderful that is in the championship. Because what happens is they start getting the pats on the back at 6, 7, 8 years old, 12, 13, 14, they're getting the pats on the back, told how great they are. Then they're like, well, they're believing it. And then at 17 and 18, then they stopped working as hard and now they're not as good as everybody else. And now what? Now they're kind of lost. Where if you take that individual who was told at 12 years old, but you know what, you're going to end up just like your brother. And something then it sparked him, right? It lit that fire where he said, no, I'm not, man. And then he got to work. And that individual then that got to work, man, slowly getting better and better and better. And then the foundation was there. So a lot of times, and this is a long Magellan type route to answer the question, Scott, because it just kind of came to me. Is we've got to have the foundation. You got to know what your identity is and where your identity is rooted so you can be able to handle the outside criticisms and the outside compliments, you know, be able to handle the failures and the successes. To come back to that foundation and who your identity and what it's rooted in. When that foundation is strong, meaning I'm not just my performance, then you'll be able to handle it a lot better.
You know, reading through your resume, you've worked with some of the most successful people in all different fields. Have you noticed that it doesn't matter about the success of someone? If you're carrying that negativity inside, you can carry it at whatever level of business or athletic status you've made. You can just walk around with that in your brain. Have you noticed that is the case?
Yeah, no question. Because the success is a lot of times just external. I mean, if you look at external people, I mean, you know, external success and say, wow, like that person must really be happy. You know, they have a gold medal.
Right.
And they're not. And, you know, it's personality really when it comes to that. It doesn't matter. I always kind of say this. It's like arrows in, arrows out. You know, if you spot it, you got it. Meaning if that negativity, you know, is in that individual, it's going to come out, you know, and it just doesn't matter like what their avenue is. And that's the part where, you know, we don't know a lot of times like the pro athletes, because all we see is like their external, what they want to show us, you know. A lot of times, man, it's if that foundation isn't there, if that caring heart like isn't there, because again, a lot of times, I mean, you know, there's a selfishness that comes to it. If the foundation isn't there, then yeah, man, the negativity can come out and just not happy. And then, well, what's the purpose about the things that we're doing? You know what I mean? Because I think you got to be obsessed about your passion, but you have to love it. There has to be this unbridled, like I just need to be around it sort of mentality. And then that positivity, then you're bringing other people along with you and you're inspiring people along the way.
I forgot to mention up front, and I think it's important that we do, that Dr. Bell is a former university professor, and he's published in numerous academic journals. So it's more than practical experience. It's more than him getting his education on a bike or a pool or out there on the trail. He's taught some of our leading people that are thinking and working through this. Go ahead, Scott.
Puking. What a great word, first of all. Secondly, let's get to the literal definition of puking. All of us that have been doing any kind of endurance sport have eventually puked. Those that are listening to the podcast that haven't had that grand opportunity of puking, it'll come. Just wait. It'll come. But here is the crazy thing, and we're going to talk about the literal puking, and then Dr. Rob, you can take that to a theoretical or a metaphorical meaning. When I feel my stomach going south, I am trying to suppress that puke. I do not want to puke because it's not pleasant. I want to hold it down, and eventually the puke overcomes the willingness to hold it down. And as one of our favorite longtime friends, nutritionist Sunny Blende said, she calls puking a reset button. Once you get that puke out, it feels better. It's not the same as being sick with the flu and puking. When you're out on the trail or on the bike or wherever you are and you puke, it's magical. The puke happens and you feel immediately better. You reset. And then you can rally. So talk to us a little bit more about the puking and how that relates to the mental fortitude that you're trying to help us understand.
Jeez, boy, you nailed it, didn't you, Scott? That was it.
I've been practicing that all morning, Rob.
He skipped to the last page of the book. He went right to the end.
That was it, man. He summed it up, man. Now we don't need to go buy the book. I thought like Puke and Rally was really just going to be, you know, an awesome hashtag. It was going to be a great book. It was, you know, because the message is there, but I didn't want it to become a scarlet letter that I carry around. And that has happened. Meaning, if we look at any of my runs over, we'll just say over marathon distance, over 30 miles, I probably haven't puked in three of them. You know what I mean? And that's probably three out of like 18 Not a lot, but I mean, enough.
Yeah.
and everyone has been a little bit different, man. I mean, from the physical sense, man, the only ones that have really, really helped is when at least that I'm hydrated, because if I'm dehydrated and then I puke, I'm going to feel good for a couple minutes, but it's going to happen again, man. And that's where it's like, then it's really, really tough. So, I mean, I even think like an Ironman, I was puking at mile 16. And it was in front of some like teenage girls that I thought like, I mean, it was just right in front of them. I thought like they were going to be videoing it, you know what I mean? And I kind of look up and they're gone. But I had enough hydration in me that I was okay. You know what I mean? I didn't want it to be a scarlet letter, but it really has, man. And I just know that it's not the puking itself. It's the fear of puking. It's the fear of failing. It's the fear of cramping up. It's the fear of not making it. That is what really becomes the mental battle. And when we get past that fear, what are we left with, man? That's when we meet ourselves. And puking is, that's what it does, right? It makes us meet ourselves. And when we meet ourselves, sometimes we like who we meet and sometimes we don't. But when we get past that fear, that's the part then that I think then we're able to overcome and we're able to come back from it. It's the fear part that I always find that's the part that just can't cripple us. And what I mean is, I'll kind of end it with this. Like some, and this was from Andre Agassi's strength coach. You know, Gil Reyes said this quote, such a righteous quote, man. He said, "Some battles aren't worth fighting even if you win." And I think of, okay, arguments with my wife, right? Like if I win that argument, I don't win. But the real part was he said, some battles are worth fighting even if you lose. And I thought that was such a righteous statement, man. Like you got to want the shot, man. You have to be in the game, right? You got to toe the line and give it what you got. And if it's not enough, it's not enough, but you still learn from it. But you were in the race, you were in the game. And that's the part where take the shot. If you're on the sidelines of life, I just don't think that's living. That's not L-I-V-I-N, right? That's just sitting on the sidelines. And real living means you got to put yourself out there and be willing to take the shot. And once you get past the fear, man, failure becomes an option, but you're eventually going to be successful.
And wear it almost as if it's a badge of honor, like back to the DNF tattoo from Hard Rock, DNF, win or finish. He or she didn't just put the win on the leg. He or she realized that those failures were part of the journey and probably wouldn't have had the successes without those failures.
Yeah. And that's what we ultimately talk about, right? If we really believe that the process is more important than the product, then that's the part. How are we celebrating that process, man? How are we recognizing it and enjoying that like along the way? I think too often we just only focus on that outcome and then it's taking even that joy away from that process and what we're trying to do. And it's really easy when the process is good, right? It's really tough when the process is bad and we're struggling and embracing the suck sort of mentality. But no matter what, I mean, the people that we meet, the relationships that we build, the things that we learn about ourselves is really what matters.
I'm interested in that tattoo. I wonder when those, if it happened all in one session or it happened within 3 years. You know, DNF, he wore that for a year.
Yeah.
He wore the second one for a year. And then finally the third year he came back and he scribed in finish. Now that's commitment.
Yeah, that'd be something, yeah. Right? We'll have to get him on the podcast, man. I'll have to find out who that was.
If it were me, I would start high on my calf. Just to give myself some room. I'm not starting.
Make sure you don't run out of room before you hit the foot.
I don't want it to be on the bottom of my soul. I need it to be seen clearly.
You could always wrap it around too, Freeman. Yeah. One of the things that you talked about that fascinated me in the book is many times when we fail or puke, we go into a realm of isolation. And that's not good. Can you explain why and why that's important to know?
Yeah. Great point. I'm glad you brought that up. I mean, the cliche, right, about you fall down 7, you get up 8, right? We love that one, right? Like what they never told us or they never told me is that when you fall down for that fifth time, you remember the second and third time that you fell and failed. And so what happens is it floods back, not just this isolated failure, but it floods back all the times that you failed before, which then gets back to affecting your identity and how you feel about yourself and in your overall view. And so we're not just overcoming that one mistake. We are, and that's the importance, but we bring back all the other failures. So it's as simple as this, is when I lose confidence, the last thing I want to do is start talking with other people. And think about it, right? If we're all playing basketball and I've missed four shots in a row, I'm not going to get on you. Come on, Don, you got to shoot better, right? I'm not going to do that because I'm not feeling good about myself. So it's like when we lose confidence, we isolate and we're just not reaching out to individuals. We're not sharing as much. And that's the part where then the real danger can take hold. It's how long do we isolate? Because it's comfort, right? It's like junk food, man. It feels good now, but not later on. And if we just keep going through that cycle, that's where it really becomes difficult. When real connection with other people is how we build confidence, and how we build confidence in ourselves and others, allowing people to coach us up, coaching other people up. And I always think this is that a better us is what makes a better you, and a better you is what makes a better us. The fact of, if I tell you enough times, Don, man, don't worry about that mistake. You can keep doing it, man, and you will make it. Who am I really teaching, right? I'm teaching myself. And that's the part where I just see it so often, is when we are really struggling, we are isolating, we're not connecting. And when we're feeling good is when we're connecting. And that's the part where we can't wait for tragedies to happen before we're building that network and the connections amongst each other.
So we're on the trail, mile X, and make it a hard X, whatever that is. And you're in that moment in your run. And sometimes in runs, we have multiple X's, but we're in an X. And we get this negative chatter starting to enter our mind. How do we interrupt that chatter? Have you worked through that? Have you coached people on that? Do you have some ideas on how to interrupt that?
Yeah. I mean, and again, I follow a lot of experts on how they do this, right? Like, you know, when they get to that pain cave sort of thing, man, or just things aren't well, like, what do they do? Don, I'm not like the most positive person. Like, you know, yeah, man, just be positive, right? Like, yeah, this is great. I'm really sucking right now. Like, that just doesn't work for me. Some people it does, man, it doesn't. The only thing that I think we've been able to do and that really works, man, is just make it to the tree. But just make it to the tree, man. You make it to the tree and then you pick another one, right? You know, make it to the mailbox. Just make it to the mailbox. And it's not, you're not making a deal with yourself, right? It's not like, because we can do that easy, right? Hey, just make it to the mailbox and then you can go ahead and walk. I'm not necessarily talking about that, because then that's too easy to do. It's just make it to the mailbox and then you pick another short-term goal. And it's the short-term goals, man. That's the part where, you know, and I love this one from Courtney to Walter, man. You know, it's just left foot, right foot, man, left foot, right foot. Try and find some kind of rhythm that you have. Get to your breath. But you got to be in the present. And if it's setting that short-term goal that's just going to be right in front of you, man, those are the strategies that I think that really help.
Small victories add up, and we know there's ebbs and flows through long endurance events, whatever it might be. And you string enough small ones together, and you'll get through that slog that you're in the middle of. You know, you need some small victories.
And that's the part, Don, where I think a lot of it, that's how we train our mind, like in our training. You know what I mean? Like, if I'm disconnected in my training, and then it really gets tough, and I don't have to fight through it right now. That's what's going to show up. So we got to know where our mind is going to go, you know, and that's where I think if you understand where your mind is going to go when you're irritated, frustrated, when you have a headache, hang up, whatever the hurt is going to be, then you're going to know how to combat it. And that's the part, I think, where it's getting back to then, hey, knowing yourself and knowing what your best strategy is going to be. And then that's how you're going to combat it in training. It's going to translate into when you prepare. I mean, when you race.
Better to learn during training than learn during your event. You're gonna become better at what you experience and what you practice. So if you bail out of every training experience when it gets a little gritty, what have you taught your body to do? You've taught your body to bail.
Yeah, that's exactly it, man. That's where it's so much is then getting back to that preparation and how we're preparing. And even though it might not be well, the worst training run, you learn from it, right? Bad race, man, you learn from it. And then that's where we get those skills and be able to put them into the next one.
I want to get into that hinge point that you're talking about. And one of your books is called The Hinge, and it's such a powerful principle. When I talked about earlier, I wanted to share this book with my daughter. I want her to read and understand what a hinge is, because she's young and she's getting out there in the world, and she's going to find some opportunities to recognize that a hinge is a moment and not something to barrier or defeat her efforts, but just truly a changing a moment. So I want to talk about that.
Okay.
But before we do, Scott and I have talked a lot about why, and it came from Simon Sinek's book, It All Starts With Why. And we've said that on the podcast that you need to start your event with a strong why. And if your why, your personal why, isn't stronger than what you're going to come up against, a cramp, a stomach, negative chatter, then the negative chatter wins. Your why has to be very, very powerful. How do you start with a why? How do you pack a why? Do you even coach knowing your why to your business, corporate athletes, and just physical athletes?
Yeah, it's a great one, right? I think, you know, your why has to make you cry. If it doesn't, it's not your why. Mm. It's not deep enough. I believe your why has to involve other people. If it involves other people, it makes the why stronger. If it's all about you and what you're doing, there's going to be cracks there. And those are the two big components that I have. And what I mean is, and then it's getting back to that, you want the shot. You just have to be around it. You want to be in it. And how do we get out there and get in life and whatever that's going to be? You know, because our why changes too. That's the thing. Our why from running 5 years ago or racing 5 years ago might not be the same why we have right now. Our why from last year isn't going to be the same as it is now. So your why changes. And then it's constantly being able to look at it and see, like, what is it? What is going to be the motivator? And then after that, that's when the discipline and the habits kind of take over. But we ask ourselves that the question all the time, right? I love this one. This was from Jeff Van Gundy, the coach, and he just said, you have to have all stressful conversations in non-stressful environments. You don't want to be out there asking yourself, why am I out here? Because that's a really highly stressful environment, and that's a rhetorical question. You don't have it, right? We're just throwing up our hands. You got to be able to ask that question in a quiet, non-stressful environment, and then be able to debrief it, man, and look at it. And I always think our why goes three levels deep. Some say five. I don't know. But there's more layers to it. Why is it that this is important to you? Why and who is it that it involves? So those are the components, I think, when it comes to our why. And then I'll end with this one is I think you have to understand your why, look at your own why, and you got to look at other people's how. Too often we want to look at what motivates them, what gets them going, which is fine. But you're looking at their why, not their how they go about doing it. If you understand your why and their how, that's how I think then we get the strategies and techniques and that we can use and apply.
Yeah, when you understand your why, your how becomes just part of the planning and procedure to get it done. It wakes you up in the morning. It's your alarm clock. Your why wakes you up.
And to your point, the why is something that's personal to you. You can't share another person's why necessarily. You can be motivated by it, and you can help use their why to structure your own. But the hows can be very similar.
You said earlier that whys relate and include other people,
yep.
And the strongest ones can.
Oh, yeah.
They can. But there are times that it's okay to be about you. There's maybe something that you're working through that's very personal, that is very intense, and it can fuel you more than another connection. Maybe you need to fix your why so that you can include the others later. And that's just me thinking, hey, I'm a hack. I don't know what I'm talking about. You're the professor in this world. So I defer to your comments.
And the thing is this, because I appreciate that, and that might be a blog post I write on it, right? It's like, I know, look, Michael Jordan, every time he would play, he said, there's one kid in that's going to watch me play, that this is the only time he's ever going to watch me play. And so, you know, Michael Jordan, I mean, would find motivation from everywhere, right? But it's like that inspired him to give his absolute best performance. And my point is this, every single one of us, there's somebody that looks up to us. There's a listener right here that they may think they don't influence or impact other people, and that's a lie. There's somebody that looks up to them that I want to be like them. And when you can kind of connect whatever that little goal is going to be or that why to that person, it makes it stronger, mm-hmm. man. It solidifies that thread. And that's how we stay connected.
I'm loving this conversation so much, and I'm ready to go to the Hinge.
Oh, yeah, man. Thanks, man. You set me up. Go ahead, Scott.
I'm just taking a little post-it, a little figurative post-it, and I'm putting it on that last comment because that was a gold nugget for me. The why is important, but if you can connect it to someone that is connected with you, it makes it powerful.
Yeah.
I love that. Love it, love it, love it.
Scott, we're going to take a short break from this conversation with Dr. Rob Bell for an important message.
You know, it's important to have mental toughness. It's also important to have a good pair of sunglasses on that head that contains the brain. The best that I've found are Gooder sunglasses. They're light, they stay on your head, and they work.
I was running on the trail the other day, and I came across, obviously, another trail runner, and I noticed, hey, he's wearing Gooders. And I thought, you know what? This guy knows what's going on. He really is one of us.
Did that qualify him? The sunglasses qualified him?
No, the fact that he passed me qualified him. He was outrunning me.
Gooder sunglasses, they're affordable, they're fun, they're fashionable. They're always coming out with new styles. Go check them out at gooder.com and use the code TRN15 for 15% off. Go to our deals page and click on that banner, and it will take you to the right website.
And now back to the show so we can learn more from Dr. Rob Bell and mental toughness.
So hinge me, Dr. Rob.
Every door has a hinge. Okay, a door without a hinge is a wall. It just doesn't work. If we hear about doors opening and closing in life, that's because of the hinge. If you ever hear of a rusty door, it's not the door that's rusty at all. It's the hinge that's rusty. So what the hinge is in our lives, it's going to be that one moment, one person, or one event that makes all the difference in our lives. It connects who we are with who we're going to become. Now, we can't connect the dots in life looking forward, right? We can only connect the dots looking backwards and seeing the impact that that coach had on us or that one decision had on us. And sometimes we might not know the hinge happens, sometimes to weeks, months, years later, the impact. But it's going to connect who we are with who we become. But the importance is this, and this is the hinge, is the importance of mental toughness, is when our moment hits, it's too late to prepare. Like tragedies that happen in our life, tragedies, right? Death of a loved one, cancer, a huge injury. Like those are immediate hinges because pandemics, because from that moment on, everything is different. But the beauty about mental toughness, the importance about it is no matter how bleak our situation is, no matter how bad an outcome looks, it only takes one. It's only going to take one catch of the ball to turn an entire game around. It takes one game, right, to turn an entire career around. You know, one part of a race, one part where we can persevere and push through, and we get that third and that fourth wind. The fact that we don't know when that it's coming, and that's the real importance of it, is every person that we meet, every call that we make is the most important one. But if we go through the motions of it, if we're not in tune with it or connected, then we go through the motions. And that's the part where we're not treating this as the most important person that we can meet. When we take that attitude, then the hinge is going to connect, and it's going to connect, and it's going to be, you know, solidify for us. And we're going to have multiple hinge moments in our lives, and we don't know when they're going to be coming. But that's the real importance of mental toughness, is being in the moment, being connected, and knowing that it only takes one. Boom. That was it, man.
You know what? Well, no, you've got more because I read your book. Right underneath my comment on the Hinge, I wrote, because you wrote it, our experiences do not define us. They influence us. Let's expand on that, because I think that's about the Hinge.
If we are our failures, then what's our identity? Right? Then we're a failure. I don't believe that. Right? I believe that we are going to fail. We are going to puke, but that we are meant to succeed, that we are meant to rally, that we are meant to be connected with others. Now that's getting back to my belief. And so if the fact of that we are our failures, or we are our successes, that's just part of the pie, man. It's just part of the story, man. And it's like, the real meaning that we have in our life comes back to that process, comes back to the relationships that we have and the adversity that we overcome. I looked at every Super Bowl champion, and some interesting things came out. One thing that was fascinating to me was this, is Brett Favre, when he held up the Super Bowl trophy, he said, "Is that it?" Like, you know, what do you mean, is that it? Like, what else could there be? Like, you just won the Super Bowl trophy. And the thing was, the reason why he said that, like, when Chuck Knoll, he won 4 Super Bowls, right, with the Steelers. When he would win a Super Bowl, he'd go through a month of depression. I can't Lawrence Taylor said, you build the Super Bowl up so much that when it happens, it's kind of a letdown. And I can't tell you the number of people that said winning was a relief. Look, there are people that fly back with a gold medal that they dedicated their life to getting. And their thoughts are, okay, now what? Or what's next? Or, boy, I thought this would kind of feel different. And that's the part, look, the experience just influences. It doesn't define us. If that gold medal defines you, it's going to leave us empty and hollow, because there has to be more to it. And why Brett Favre said that, why the coaches went through depression, why they would say it was relief, was this, is they didn't want it to end. It was over. What he really loved, man, was the practical jokes that they played on coach. What he missed was the week 10 comeback. When they were down 24-10, they came back and beat the Giants. The adversity and the struggle and the relationships along the way that they had. And when I was talking to the NFL coaches, I mean, these are coaches that have won the Super Bowl trophy. I said, look, okay, if the Super Bowl trophy is the most important thing, I want you to go ahead and picture in your head, close your eyes and picture in your head, what does that image look like? And I said, I guarantee it's not just you in the tub with your arms around that Lombardi trophy. I said, I bet it's you thinking about the other people that came along with you in that journey. And that's the part where the process is more important than that product, and our experiences, that's where it influences, doesn't define us. And it just becomes part of that story.
You tell the story about Bill Walsh, the San Francisco 49er football coach, after his third Super Bowl win, and immediately with the players celebrating behind him. I'll go ahead and let you tell your story.
Yeah, man. He said, I felt like an outsider, because I knew I was done coaching. Moments after winning his Super Bowl, he said, I didn't even feel like part of the team because I knew I was done. I was like, really? Like, is that what it's about? Or is it about, and that's, it just solidifies that, because we have to look at success and people that had success. They're always saying, look, it's the relationships that we built along the way, man. It's the process we built along the way.
So how do we put a safety net under that? Is there a way to protect ourselves, or is that just the process? Protect ourselves from that emotional depression, the letdown. I'm no longer in the hunt. It's behind me. We reached the goal. Is there anything that we can do to protect that?
Boy, that's a good one, right? And I think that's going to be its own episode and its own book, because where do most people die climbing Mount Everest? It's on the way down, right? Hey, they reached the mountaintop, man. We got it. We can't live on the mountaintop. So I think it's just the awareness that there's going to be a come down. You're going to come down off that mountain. You can't live on that mountaintop. And that was my struggle, man. I always wanted to live on the mountaintop. I feel good, buddy. I want to feel better. Well, how else do you feel better? Well, then you start searching for things outside yourself to make you feel better. And that's where then the maladaptive and the self-medication comes into play. And that doesn't help because you want to get back on that mountaintop. So it's recognizing first going through the journey, that the process and how we recognize it, how are we taking the time to appreciate it and not just check it off in the box saying, okay, man, that one's done, on to the next. Because if that's what we do, then that's what's going to happen after the event, after the mountaintop experience. So knowing that it's going to happen, then I think it's allowing ourselves to make sure after really important events, you don't have anything like really scheduled right after that, because you're going to go through that. You're going to go through a lot of mood swings, and allowing yourself to kind of come back and allow yourself time to go back down that mountain. And, you know, if you look at it, right, like nothing grows above that mountaintop, man, of 12,000 feet, man, nothing grows up there. You're not going to be living up there. We're going to be living down the valley. So I think it's allowing ourselves time to process, to celebrate. I think the celebrations are also important, man, after those mountaintop experiences, and being able to celebrate with other people, and then celebrate those process along the way. Like, not just checking off the box saying, man, okay, that one's done, on to the next.
So it makes me think the mountaintop experience, whether you're an athlete, an Olympian that's working on it, whether it's corporate or business and you've climbed your startup company to IPO or whatever it might be, but you're on this mountaintop and then it's over. I would imagine some of the chemicals that exist on that mountaintop, people try to self-medicate to try to reproduce it because they love the hunt, they love the feel, but they can't get back there. And so I imagine people reach out and do some unhealthy things to try to relive or experience again that mountaintop that you can only spend a short time on because life has cycles and you need to come off.
And that's exactly it. And I think that's the awareness piece, right? Like the back to the Mount Everest example. What I mean, you know, thousands and thousands of dollars, but I mean, 6 months of actually preparing for that, how much time it takes to actually climb it when you're there, and what you're on top for 10 minutes at most. Mm-hmm. So you got to come back down. All that for 10 minutes, process more important than the product. And I think once we get that and we're aware of that, we can start to appreciate it more, and we can start to combat it when we're going to have the down times.
We've talked about puke, but let's define, I think it's important to define rally, because when I think rally, I really think a victorious push towards something. Are all rallies big and victorious, or some rallies can be just a change?
It's yeah. And I remember speaking with a pretty popular boxing coach. You know, if we think about boxing, right, mentally tough with boxing, right? I'm a lover, man. I ain't a fighter. Like, I don't want to be getting hit in the face. That's just not me. Some people are wired that way. Good for them. And I asked them, I said, how do you know a boxer is like really mentally tough? Because in order to be mentally tough, there has to be adversity that's there. If things are just great, right, and we have a peak experience and we're in the flow, that's not mental toughness. That's just a great experience. So there has to be adversity that is going to be evident, right? And if ever I'm speaking to a group, I say, raise your hand if you really want to have a difficult week. Nobody's raising their hand, right? We're not like, so the adversity has to be present. But the boxing coach, I asked him, I said, how do you know if somebody's mentally tough? And he says they show up the next day. Mm-hmm. You know, they get beat, they show up the next day. And that's the part where I think the rally is so important. And I think about this too, even a rally in tennis. A rally in tennis, like, it's not a big celebration. It's just a great point. We want that. A rally always involves other people. You know, if you think of a political campaign, political rally, always seems to involve other people too. And that's the part about rally and the connection that comes so important, man. It's just not about, it's not about you and standing on the mountaintop. It's about the people that we bring along with us and who we celebrate. And rallying, a lot of times it's just showing back up, and it's getting back to that belief. I believe that we're all going to be successful if we do not give up. If you just stay in it long enough, success will happen. Life shows us that, right? It's proof, man. We just got to stay in the game long enough. It's a game of attrition. Stay in the game long enough, you will be successful.
I can't get this image of this tattoo on this guy's leg out of my head, because that's a great, as you were talking about that, I'm thinking about that tattoo. You know, he could have easily put the DNF on his leg and gave up and not shown up the next day, but that wasn't what he was made of. He was made out of a rally. Let's go try again. Oops. Got the crap beat out of me again, but guess what? I'm going to show up and train for another 12 months until I can toe the line again. And eventually it paid off. I love that.
I have not worked with any pro athletes. And I'm going to use the C word here, right? I haven't worked with any pro athletes that hasn't choked under extreme pressure and circumstances. They all have, you name it. I want them choking in practice so they know where their mind's going to go, you know, when they're under extreme pressure. But you don't get to that level without having done that. Like, that is part of the path. That is part of the journey. Knowing that failure is going to be there, man, that you're going to be fat on your face and you are going to be puking. That's part of it. And if you're not willing to go through it, then get back on the sidelines. But I just, again, I don't think the sidelines is worth it, man. I think it's in the game, man, is that's when the real success is going to come. And it's like, look, you can, you know, other people can describe you, but only you can define you. Only you are going to be able to define what you think success and reaching that is going to be.
You have a unique perspective of being a coach, being a researcher, having a degree in psychology, writing a book and research for the book, and as an athlete in many different sports. Which sport requires the most mental toughness?
So I get asked this question quite a bit, because it's a little bit different for every sport. It depends on, like, well, mental toughness, again, it's how we cope with adversity, deal with the struggle and the setbacks. The other part of that mental toughness is how well we handle pressure. So if you're looking at, like, mental toughness, it's not all or nothing. It's not like, hey, I have it or I don't. Like, there are levels and shades of mental toughness. So, and it's a skill too. Like, if you look at somebody, like, look, they're really good at letting go of mistakes. That's not me, man. Right? I'm horrible at that. Right? I mean, I'm the hanging judge when it comes to me making mistakes. Right? Like, off with my head. My son, on the other hand, makes mistakes, it's gone. I'm like, that's incredible. Like, if you show me an athlete that can let go of mistakes, I'll show you somebody that's mentally tough. And so my point is, it's like, well, what's the most difficult one? So if you look at, like, motivation and discipline, dude, swimmers, because swimmers are twice a day all year round, you know, at 5:30 and in the afternoon. If you look at being able to handle pressure moments in a place, in a sport where you cannot hustle, well, it's golf. If you look at a sport where, you know, it's against one other person, you're naked in front of the gods, well, then it's going to be wrestling or boxing. You know, if you look at, well, all you have to do is just keep moving, then it's going to be running and never giving up. So it's like, well, depending on, like, what is the skill that you're really looking at is going to determine, hey, what's the most, like, mentally tough sport that there is. And, you know, the mental skills are the same regardless of the sport, the context just kind of varies. So that's my way out of answering that. I did give you a couple examples. Because those are all mental health sports. It's just, you know, looking at a field goal kicker, right? There's not a kicker that goes out there where it's not an important kick. Every kick that person's going out there to kick is the most important, right? So it's like, it really just depends on the context and, like, what they're going to be going through.
You're right. There's so many different shades of mental toughness, and it all depends on which one you need at that moment, depending on which position you're in. You know, I think about the tight end that's running diagonally across the field that's going to be led by a pass with two linebackers coming at him that he can't even see. That's a mental tough.
When you're going to get hit.
You're going to get nailed. And that's when the tight end gets alligator arms, where he can't reach his arms out to get the ball because he knows he's going to get hammered. There's a mental toughness.
Yeah.
Right?
Absolutely. And then there's a level to it, right? It's like, okay, well, if this is somebody that's trying to make the team, well, that's the difference between if you make the catch, you're eating steak. If you don't make the catch, and you're eating hamburger. Mm-hmm. But then it's like, okay, well, let's say this is a tight end that has success, that has a contract. that why has changed, right? Now you're dealing with success. And is that person still willing to put their arms out and catch that ball?
Yeah.
So you look at all different varies, and it's not like just one container fits it all with mental toughness. I could say this, right? If mental toughness, like by itself, it's not going to win anybody a championship, but if you don't have it, it will lose it for you.
You work with a lot of athletes. How long does it take for you to evaluate, am I working with a mentally tough person or not?
That's a great question. And I'd say early on in my career, like I thought I could identify it, right? Like I can spot it, whether this person's got it or not. And I missed. Mm. And then I was like, well, you don't know what the hell you're talking about. So speculation is the mother of all evil. And I try not to speculate what a person has or doesn't have. I'm trying to find out, because the thing about mental toughness is this, right? We can't necessarily see it. I'm trying to find their soul. I'm trying to find their heart. And that's the parts where I'm trying to measure. And at the same time, being able to coach that up. Because if you get somebody who isn't going to be denied, right? They're just not going to be denied. Then the world's their oyster, and it just doesn't matter like what their path is going to be. It's just then it's being able to figure out, well, what is it that they really want? If you have somebody that has talent and has tenacity, you're dealing and is a little bit stubborn at the same time, then you're dealing with like some great skills that you can kind of work with and mold and motivate. But it's being able to figure out where it is that athlete wants to go. And again, everyone's an athlete. Our office is just different. It's being able to figure out where it is that you want to go and what's the path and who's the guide that's going to be right to help take you there.
On your website, as I looked at that, do you have some opportunity for some personal coaching that you do? Do you do some coaching for people? I saw there was an icon that I could click on that. Is that available to folks?
Yeah, that's my passion. I mean, that's what I'm most passionate about. I love speaking. I love group coaching, but I love the one-on-one, man, because the one-on-one is where you are on the trail together with somebody, right? Like you're in it. Mm. And you can see those hinge moments, and you're there with the puke, and you feed them the bottle, and here's the rally, man. You know, it's like the one-on-one coaching is what I appreciate. And I've been blessed, man. I've got two people that work for me that take a lot of the athletes that I can't take. And because anybody that comes to me, I want to feed them, right? I mean, whether it's you're eating a happy meal or we're sitting down for the 5-course steak dinner, either way, like you're getting fed, it just turns on, hey, what do you want?
There's a lot of resources there, Don. I'm glad you brought up his website. There's two that we'll link in the show notes, which is the pukeandrallybook.com. And one of the things on there is there's a quiz. If you want to know if you're mentally tough or not, if you think that there's room for improvement, or if you think that you are the star of the show, there's a quiz. And you can take the quiz and find out. I'm not going to tell you what my score was, Don. But I took the quiz. The other website, I'm not going to tell you. Maybe on a run sometime.
The truth comes out. I've been carrying you on the trail for years, pal.
The other website is drrobbell.com, which is where you can find his coaching services and the other opportunities there. Lots of really cool information.
He also has a podcast. Dr. Bell, why don't you tell us about that?
Yeah, the podcast is 15 Minutes Mental Toughness. So we interview experts, coaches, and athletes on their hinge moment and mental toughness.
So if you don't have an hour to listen to this podcast,
I've got a newsletter goes out every Friday as well. So if people want to get on the website and sign up for that, man,
doing it.
And get the book. I mean, that's the whole point here. 156 pages. If you're a slow reader, you can get it done in an evening. A lot of good stuff there. Not only will help you with your athletic performance, but your professional performance, your relationship performance, your life performance. It's like we talk about a lot on the podcast. Running is a metaphor for life, and this is a good book to learn how to rally when the puke comes, and the puke will come. I think. That's a terrible way to end Dr. the podcast. Bell, the puke will come. Well,
yeah. Let me see if I can turn it up a little bit. Dr. Bell, we sure appreciate you spending this time with us. We know that your time is precious and valuable, and we're excited to have learned from you and to look into some of your other 7 books that you have, because as I look through the titles, I could see there's other lessons for me to pick up and learn.
Well, I appreciate you guys for having me on, man. It's an honor.
When is the race, Dr. Rob, the 100 miler?
So we'll timestamp this now. So it's October 9th.
October 9th. We may have to have a recap, a short recap after October 9th. And that may connect you, your why may connect with Trail Runner Nation, knowing that you have to be accountable and come back and tell us how the puke came and how the rally came also.
And remember, Dr. Bell, you can't connect dots forward. You have to connect dots looking back. Not to repeat your book to you, but I've learned a lot already.
It's true, man.
All right, Dr. Bell, thank you so much. Now go out and run
and rally
Moss.
It's the end of the show, and we would be amiss if we didn't thank a few people. First of all, a listener. Thank you for making it to the end of the podcast. We knew it was probably harder than running 50 miles, but we're grateful to you. We're grateful to our Patreon supporters. We need to talk about the Cocopelli 1000, which is coming up. Those Patreon supporters have bibs. They're waiting to learn more about that. If you want to become a Patreon supporter, go to trailrunnernation.com and click on the support us at the top of the screen. We want to give special thanks to our business Patreon member, Doug Crumley with Ameriprise.
Think of Doug as your pacer or crew for your finances, because he will take care of you.
You can find him at Doug Crumley Jr., DougCrumleyJr.com.
We need to thank our producer, Doug Mayer, who helps put this thing together and gives us some direction. And importantly, sound man Ryan, who really makes sure that, well, we sound like we're doing our job, Scott. Without him, it would be chaotic.
Tune in next week for another episode. Thank you.